You mentioned the Topo 2, and that was one of the most interesting data sets I've seen in a long time. It's funny, I interviewed Dennis after the press release, and we talked, of course, about the BCRG study, but it was before San Antonio. And he told me off the record, didn't want it on the program, that he was really looking forward to seeing that Topo 2 data. He didn't know it at that time. And I guess you guys only got it like 5 days
the
before San Antonio.
It was like the night before.
Is that right?
Yes. That data came at the last minute.
Can you track out that story and what you looked at and saw?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at, you know, some now very old data sets from the mid-1990s from the CLGB, there was a clear effect of anthracycline dose among the HER2-positive subset of patients that were analyzed in some of the old CLGB adjuvant studies. And that was a New England Journal paper, and that's what really gave rise to this whole paradigm that if you're HER2-positive, you uniquely benefit from anthracyclines. And that was confirmed by the NSABP. They did a retrospective subset analysis of their B11 study, which I think was an unusual adjuvant regimen back in the day of phenylalanine, mustard, and fluorouracil with or without anthracycline. And in that data set, again, was this clear benefit of the incorporation of anthracycline unique to HER2-positive subjects. Since that time, there have been some neoadjuvant studies looking at the issue of HER2 amplification and or overexpression and response to anthracyclines in the neoadjuvant setting, and there's a clear relationship between clinical response to neoadjuvant chemotherapy and degree of HER2 alteration in that setting. So the question then became, is this an effect of HER2, or is there some other explanation? And to address that question, I did a series of transfection experiments back when I was a fellow in Dennis Slamon's lab years ago. And back in the day, we figured that forced overexpression of HER2 in cell lines would cause them to be more sensitive to anthracyclines. After all, that's what the clinical data suggested. And when I actually measured the IC50s of HER2 transfected cells compared to control transfected cells, they didn't budge. They were spot on. HER2 did not confer special sensitivity to Adriamycin at all. So at that point, we really had to scratch our heads and decide, you know, what can explain this clinical observation? The clinical observation is real. There was really no disputing it. So we looked at the HER2 amplicon and realized that the topoisomerase 2 gene is in close physical proximity on chromosome 17q, and on occasion, it is co-amplified along with the HER2 gene, and in as much as the Topo 2 gene product is the target for the anthracycline antibiotics, it is targeted therapy to some extent after all, that might actually be what's driving the sensitivity of these cases. So that was the whole basis for Mike Press's subset analysis of the BCRG cohort. We realized based on the study design that we really had a unique opportunity because we had a non-anthracycline arm and an anthracycline arm, both of which had Herceptin, in a pure population of HER2 amplified patients. That was the other beauty of the BCRG study, is that the eligibility required demanded HER2 gene amplification by FISH to get on the study. So Dennis presented the preliminary data at the plenary, and Mike Press had a nice poster also summarizing the data. And it's important to realize, I think, at this point that it is interim analysis. It's a subset analysis. I think it's only the first couple thousand of the 3,200 cases, so it's not yet complete. So longer follow-up will be needed. We'll need to finish all 3,222 cases, et cetera, et cetera. But with those caveats, the hypothesis that co-amplification of Topo 2 does confer additional benefit from anthracyclines seems to be indicated by this preliminary analysis. Now, the p-values aren't quite there yet. I think, you know, they're marginally significant, and it's going to take more time and completion of the data set with longer follow-up to see if that really will tighten up in terms of the statistics.
Can you actually describe, you know, what the curves sort of look like with the Topo 2 amplified and not amplified?
So in the Topo 2 non-amplified cohort, the two Herceptin-treated arms, that is TCH and AC followed by TH, were really, you know, pretty much spot on top of each other. So for Topo 2 non-amplified cases, maybe you really don't need an anthracycline. In contrast, in the Topo 2 amplified patients, the anthracycline-based Herceptin arm was numerically on top. It was trending towards superiority over TCH. And that
I was trying to remember, in the non-amplified, though, did both of those groups still look superior to the non-trastuzumab arm?
I think in that particular subset that surprisingly the non-Herceptin-treated arm that had amplification of both Topo 2 and HER2 did surprisingly well and was competitive with Herceptin treatment, even as I recall, in that subset.
Well, that, I mean, because I've heard a couple people conclude, well, do you need trastuzumab in the topo II amplified patient?
I think you do, because if you look at those curves carefully, the Kaplan-Meier curve that's on the very top is the ACTH arm that had co-amplification of topo II. So I think you still need Herceptin in those patients, and that was still superior to the non-Herceptin arm. But the non-Herceptin arm did surprisingly well if they had co-amplification of topo II and were treated with anthracycline.